What's going on, everybody? This is Matt from The Tangent. Today's episode is actually longer than 30 minutes. So if you are listening on the radio, you will hear the 30 minutes. However, you will have the opportunity to download it in full as a podcast later on. And I will remind you of that at the end of the episode. I hope you enjoy this week's episode of The Tangent.
We've already been having too much fun.
Yes, for those of you who are listening, Father Sam and I have been on the call for about, 15 minutes, just not recording.
Just talking, and it's good for us to hit the record button every once in a while, just to make sure.
It's good for us to hit the record button. Hey, how was your Easter?
Easter was lovely. I lost my voice, so I sounded like Batman for a couple of days after Easter, which was
yes, you did.
Fun.
You called me.
I wanted you to hear it. I wanted you to hear it. Like I felt like this is something that Matt deserves to hear. And
I'm honored to be in that kind of position in your life.
Well, I feel bad because I had planned to use some of that time after Easter when there's a day where there's kind of a lull and it's a good rest day. But I'd also planned to use that to record some of the daily gospel reflections that I do. And with a voice that sounded like Batman, I decided that nobody wants a week's
worth of daily gospel reflections. This is your daily gospel reflection. Also, that was a terrible Batman voice. It was a terrible Batman voice for me.
Today, Jesus says to his disciples, come, follow me.
Follow me. You know?
That would sound kind of cool, right?
Yeah, that's a podcast I'd listen to.
But a week's worth of that, I don't know. It's just going to start sounding like it's an affect. It's not real.
It's some sort of.
I couldn't do that. Yeah. So I ended up not being able to record anything for a while. Holy Week was beautiful.
What was the highlight?
I think for me, the highlight was, number one, the response that we got from folks in the parish coming to the Triduum. The Triduum's always kind of tricky, right? People understand that it's important, but given it's a weeknight, Thursday night, what do we do on Thursday nights? Friday, Good Friday can be tricky because some people have no choice but to go to work on Good Friday. Other people are really conscientious. They want to take the day off or their job is like whatever their work is shuts down for Good Friday because they recognize it's important. Holy Saturday is always tricky because you have people who show up at like 5 p.m. for the Saturday evening mass thinking that it's the same. And then you have to explain to them, no, there's this thing called the Easter Vigil. It doesn't start till 8 p.m. And it's 3 hours long. So there could be this little panic.
So you should stick around for an extra 3 hours. You'll get it.
It's going to be great. But something that I noticed happening this year, differently than I've seen it in past years, was either people who had come for Triduum services for the first time, who had never done Holy Thursday, or who had never come for the Easter Vigil. A lot of people know Good Friday and know Good Friday very well.
Right.
That's very familiar. But there's a lot of folks who have never come to the Mass of the Lord's Supper. Or I was finding people who have come in the past to everything in the Triduum, but came this year and noticed something that they had never noticed before. And so after the Mass of the Lord's Supper, we had gone to the altar of repose. We had stripped the altar. We were kind of cleaning up the sacristy and everything. And one of our altar services, mom came in to get him. And she had a list of questions. She said, Father, I've been to this mass before, but what happened here? What was this? What was this? And it was just stuff that she had never really paid attention to before. But because she was thinking about her son serving and kind of watching him, she was paying more attention to certain details that ordinarily she just would have been sort of participating along with the mass, but not really noticing some of the detail, but it was having a kid involved that helped her to notice certain things. So I thought that was really beautiful. And to realize that people are having this experience where they're recognizing something, and then to realize that the liturgy itself catechizes, when I was able to explain some of the symbolism, why do we walk around the church with the Blessed Sacrament at the end? She goes, I'm sure you've done that before, but why did we walk in that procession? And why did we go to this other chapel for the, what's that all about? Mm-hmm. And explaining, Jesus goes out with the apostles at the end of the Last Supper and they go to the Garden of Gethsemane. And so the altar of repose represents Gethsemane. Oh, okay. And does that altar stay there all weekend? I said, no, actually, this is cool because tonight we'll take the Blessed Sacrament out. Like, we close the altar, we close the chapel. Why do you do that? Because Jesus is arrested. And so there's this time on Good Friday when we don't go to the tabernacle because Jesus isn't there. He's been arrested. He's on trial. And so the liturgical symbolism was just all clicking for her. There is nothing greater than when that happens. Father Brendan, my associate, said something to me. He preached on Holy Thursday, and I was the celebrant. He had surgery on his elbow, so his arm was out of commission, so he couldn't do a lot of the stuff that you'd want to do. He gave a killer homily, let me tell you. It was just an awesome homily on Holy Thursday. And he also took care of the master of ceremonies role with all the servers,
right,
making sure they were doing all the stuff that they were supposed to do, that they were in the spots that they needed to be in. And he said to me at the end of the mass, he said, this is the best part of being a priest. Yeah, I think it is. There's just something so powerful about Holy Week itself, you know?
Yeah.
And then, man, I don't know what you experienced at your place on Easter Sunday.
Oh.
Well, you were in Pittsburgh with your family. So we got to talk about that for a second.
I do, but I want you to finish because I want to wrap all three
up
together.
Yeah, because I know you've got a great thing for Easter. I just realized, wait, of course you weren't at your own parish, but you had something great. Anyway, the Easter Vigil was beautiful. I had a couple of people, father and son, who had never come, Mike and Liam. They'd never been to the Easter Vigil before, and they ushered for it and helped us out. And just today, like, they're raving about it. You know, it's been a week. Like, this was the coolest thing they'd seen.
Right.
And we had a baptism. We had four confirmations and receptions into
communion with
the
church.
So yeah, really beautiful. But then Easter Sunday, every single mass was standing room only. We had to use our community room for overflow seating with a telecast, you know, it was just great. Every single mass was completely packed, and just having that is—it's the greatest. It's so beautiful.
Well, and I want to take this opportunity actually to do a little plug, right? So we're going to be interviewing Cardinal Dolan for the gallery.
We are?
You didn't know? And he recently wrote an article in the Wall Street Journal that I thought was great.
It was very good
because. So you read it about the you know, people returning to the church on Easter Sunday, I just loved his approach, which is like, there is the temptation to be like, you're only here because it's Easter, you know, but like, what a terrible approach to welcoming someone into the church. you should be here every week. I'm here today. I don't care. So like, I loved that. I loved his response. You know, I loved his. It was proactive too, because it was before Easter, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, it was.
I think it was right. So it was proactive. It was to encourage his flock.
Yeah, I think it was more written to the people who go to mass.
Absolutely.
Priests. Like his absolutely. Audience was really those who are already practicing the faith regularly. Like, we've got an opportunity to really welcome people and encourage them. And I think that's a thing that priests are always trying to strike the right balance. Because you don't want to pass up an opportunity on Christmas or on Easter when you know you're going to have bigger crowds than normal to invite people to a more regular practice of their faith if they're not there with great regularity. You want to be able to invite them. But you've got to do it the right way. The invitation
How
has
does
to
it
be,
affect the way you preach?
Yeah. Well, so the invitation has to be really clear. Like you can't tiptoe around it too much. Otherwise, it gets completely muddled by...
Right.
Like, I tried to be too artful, and so nobody knows that I invited them to come to Mass next Sunday. Right. So there's also got to be some inspiration that's behind it. Like, there's a reason why this is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why this makes a difference. There's a reason why this says something that speaks to the heart, that speaks to our soul, that speaks to the deepest reality of who we are, that we actually have an opportunity to be renewed in week after week after week, right?
Right.
I think it's all in the way that it's presented. You know, you always hear the story of the priest who comes out and says, you know, we do this every Sunday. Depending on where you're from, if you're from the Northeast, that's funny. because that's like a sarcastic response. That's funny.
Right.
Go to other parts of the country, and that might be received more as a passive aggressive kind of snide comment. You know, whereas
certainly
you want to be careful with that kind of stuff. So knowing who you're talking to, knowing your neighborhood is really helpful. Knowing your like the people who are there. I have in the past like reminded people the week before Palm Sunday, like the folks who come to Mass every week. That's if they're there the week before Palm Sunday, you see them every Sunday. So you throw out the reminder them. Next week we start Holy Week. It's Palm Sunday, which means that for the next two Sundays we're probably going to see some people who we don't normally see.
Right.
And it's really important for us to
be a welcoming community.
Yeah. And to be excited that they're here. It's a gift. It's such a gift. Right.
When I was growing up, the way that my pastor phrased it is, you might not get the seats that you regularly sit in for the next 2 weeks, and we ask that you don't get angry.
Yeah. That's a really good way to say it, though.
I did
get an angry email once from a guy who told me that he refuses to come to Mass on Christmas or Easter because that's when all the hypocrites come, and he doesn't get his he doesn't think it's fair that he has to stand.
The irony.
I don't know what to do with that. Like, I don't even know how to respond. I understand you want to see. I understand you want to be there, but like, refuses to come. Then come to the Easter Vigil. You'll get a seat. I promise.
If anything,
you can come, and then you can take a seat that somebody vacates when they get to the fourth reading and realize that there's still more readings coming, and go, I'm out of here. I'm not staying for this.
Right. Which my favorite way to pitch the Easter Vigil to people is that there's 17 readings. I know that it's actually 9 and just a bunch of responsorial psalms, but I love to be like, oh my gosh, there's so many. You're going to love it.
I tell people we play with fire. The whole thing starts with playing with fire. How could you not want to be part of that? You know, we give everybody in the church, doesn't matter their age, doesn't matter if they're capable of holding it, we give them a lit candle. And we let them just stand there for a while.
Like, how long does it take the candle to burn? We don't know.
We have no idea. There's no way of knowing. All right, tell me about your Easter Vigil experience.
So I'm gonna bring it to the whole Triduum. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
First of all, it was a special experience. We went to Pittsburgh, and it was special because we have a family member, Renee and I have a family member that is entering into the church. Officially at Pentecost now.
Okay.
So like, awesome. And he is unbelievably pumped about it.
He's in the 50-day window now.
Yeah.
Less than 50.
It's so
awesome.
And a piece of why the Triduum was so amazing was because we basically watched him get progressively more and more excited.
Awesome.
You know, like throughout the process. And so Holy Thursday was great. It was the first. It was the first time. I mean, it was special because this is someone Renee and I have been praying for years. Yeah. You know, and then he had this dramatic and quick conversion experience through Exodus 90. And so like we left. You know, we were last in Pittsburgh for Christmas, and we left after Christmas, and it was like, oh yeah, you know, I'll do it with you. You know, mm-hmm. And then we went back and he was like, I want to go to Holy Thursday Mass. And it was like, oh my gosh, you know, like, wow, this is quite the experience.
Yeah.
And so Holy Thursday was great. Just kind of like, it was almost like just surreal that we got to go to Mass with him. But Good Friday was the one that really struck me. Mm. So, you know, my experience of Good Friday, my whole life, this is the first time I've ever experienced something different at a Good Friday service, right? Usually it's veneration of the cross. That is not what our quote-unquote Pittsburgh parish did. They held a funeral for Jesus. I know. On the front program, okay, it said this is a tradition from Jerusalem from the 5th century that got transferred over to the European church during the medieval ages, right? And we are utilizing this traditional service. And so it was wild. It was very moving.
Was this like the 3 p.m. thing, or was this like a separate service that they did?
I think
my guess is that veneration of the cross was included.
Yeah.
It was just expanded on.
Okay.
Because they walked down the center aisle at the beginning with a giant crucifix, right? And it was in front of the altar, just like it always has been anytime I've ever gone to a Good Friday service. What was different was after the cross was venerated, not by the people in the pews, right? They placed a statue of Christ crucified, so like off of the cross, really Christ dead in the tomb, yep, on the altar, and incensed this statue on the altar.
Hmm.
And after they incensed this statue on the altar, they placed him into a casket. And in the casket, there were like pallbearers and everything. They processed out of the church with Christ in a casket. And everybody followed out of the church, right? And we went, really, there was three stops. So one was in the church. After we get out of the church, we were behind the church, not really in the parking lot. We were in the parking lot. They were in front of the sacristy. Not the sacristy, the where you live.
The rectory.
The rectory. And they wrapped this statue in a shroud, mm-hmm, and they incensed it, and they perfumed it with frankincense. And then they brought him to the tomb, which was admittedly just the church hall, because they don't have an actual tomb.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And they placed him at the front, and they finished this service. And the exit ticket was as if you were at a wake. And so you went and you knelt in front of this casket with this statue of Christ crucified. And it was different, you know, like I was just surprised, because I was surprised for many reasons. The first reason was they were all wearing black vestments with silver.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that is awesome. They looked so beautiful. It was weird. It was like, these black vestments are beautiful. But then watching them incense the body on the altar, it brought about like a whole new image of sacrifice, you know? It made real this image of sacrifice. But then watching the people process behind this casket, man, there were so many people crying as they processed behind the pallbearers. It was wild. And then to like use that exit ticket where I knelt in front of, I think it might have just been like the closest I'd ever been to a life-size statue of Jesus crucified, you know?
Mm.
And he's, and like arms crossed, you know, Dracula style, right? But arms crossed in this casket and like bloody on the head, you know what I mean? Like you see the wounds from the crown.
Yeah.
Where like I had like this whole in my head as we're waiting in this long line to just kneel in front of this statue to pray, I kind of was like, what am I gonna say? What am I gonna pray? And I thought, like, I ended up just praying this entirely different prayer than what I had been kind of thinking about, because I prayed Renee, Michael, and I, so I prayed for the three of us, and what I ended up just saying was, I'm so sorry.
Mm.
I'm so sorry I did this to you.
Yeah,
you know. And so it was so moving, because it like humanized the sacrificial aspect of it, you know? Anyway, so you were making some faces. I think that you have some thoughts. I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, the statue that you're describing, it reminds me of, I've been to Mexico, and a lot of churches there will have a statue of Christ, like in the tomb, or
right,
if not in the tomb already, like immediately after the being taken down from the cross, and mm-hmm. so it's meant to be a place where you kind of meditate on the
right,
the dead body,
man,
right, and they just kind of put it there for you without any kind of fear. Like, here are the wounds, the marks of the scourging. Here's the nail wounds, the wound in his side.
Right.
Look at his face and how it's beaten, and it's pretty vivid and gory even.
I mean, admittedly, this one wasn't so gory.
But it's meant it's meant to give you like that very direct contact with the immediate aftermath. And it's also sort of meant to, I think, get you to meditate on a moment that we don't spend a whole lot of time with.
Yeah.
We kind of go from the cross to the tomb. We don't spend a whole lot of time carrying him from the cross to the tomb. And that idea that there's right. There's this time before the tomb is closed while we're just dealing with death, with the death of Christ.
Right.
And we don't often spend a lot of time with that.
We don't spend a lot of time in that trauma.
Yeah, well, because the liturgy itself, you know, when we do the service of the Lord's Passion on Good Friday, we read the Passion, we venerate the mm-hmm. cross, there's communion, mm-hmm. and then we're done. Like we leave. Mm-hmm. There's not the sense of staying and just sort of like sitting at the Pietà, right? Sitting at the foot of the cross with Mary as she holds the broken body of her son. We mm-hmm. don't do that. Mm-hmm. So this is a really interesting thing. So what my curiosity is, what time of day did this take place? Was this done in place of the 3 p.m. celebration of the Lord's Passion?
No,
was this
no,
like an additional devotion?
I believe this was at 5.
Awesome.
So I'm fairly certain it was at 5.
I think that Good Friday, that you've got... When you celebrate the Passion at 3, but there's so many other things that you can do.
They did the readings from the Passion.
That's cool.
So
so
it was incorporated.
If it's this ancient practice, then that's probably always been part of it. And actually, yeah. I would bet, I don't know, but I would bet that our current iteration of the celebration of the Lord's Passion that we do at 3 p.m. is probably mm-hmm. taking parts from these other traditional practices and kind of creating the current liturgy as it stands, you know?
Right.
No, it's super
I'm trying to see if I can find what time.
Well, like
I'm on their website.
I know we did Stations of the Cross at noon, and then the Celebration of the Passion at 3, and then at 7 we had Tenebrae. So kind of meditating on the penitential psalms.
It might have been at 3. It might have been at 3.
Well, either way, this sounds like a really beautiful.
Although I'm not sure, obviously. But the other so it was different, and it kind of. It shook me out of, I think it like shook me out of like a liturgical, not complacence, but like almost familiarity, you know, where like if you do something enough times, mm-hmm. it just gets normal, you know,
right.
And I've been doing specifically the Good Friday service my whole life. Like even growing up when I wasn't doing the whole Triduum, we always went Good Friday.
Yeah.
You know,
so, the same way. I was the same way. It was
right.
Good Friday,
you know,
forever,
so,
no matter what. Holy
right,
Thursday,
right.
sometimes.
Sometimes. And so just to, I don't know, it just was so moving.
Yeah.
The other thing was we did, what did, was it Good Friday had the Grand Silence? Is that the day?
Yeah, Good Friday, traditionally you do the
we
silence.
Did the Grand Silence.
How'd it work?
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was... So we did it from 12 to 3, and it ended up just being my brother-in-law and I, and we went to stations at noon. So the first part of our, and we were late, so the first part of our Grand Silence was being late for stations.
Nice. Yeah, that's good.
And it was hilarious. God made it so clear to me immediately that the purpose of silence is not just being quiet, and here's how he made it clear, okay? We got in the car. It's like 11:59. We pull out of the driveway. It's noon. The Grand Silence has begun. One of the doors of our car is open. We don't know which one. And so my brother-in-law and I are like, we're like, it's like we're trying to figure out which door is open, but we've just literally 30 seconds ago made this promise to not talk for 3 hours. And so we're like pointing, and he's like opening one door, and it like it shuts, but he shuts it again, you know.
Awesome.
And we drive 10 feet, and the bing goes off again because that wasn't the right door. And so I'm like, oh man, maybe it's the trunk, but I'm not allowed to say that. So I'm just like pointing, you know, like pointing to the back seat, and, you know. So we hit a red light, so he gets out of the car and opens the door and shuts the door, and but I'm like. I mean, it's like we're 30 seconds in and we're cracking up. You know what I mean? Doing a terrible job.
Yeah.
But
you're
it
not
was,
doing
it
silence well, but it's happening.
Right,
yeah.
right, right. But the thing is that it was immediately very clear of like the purpose of silence isn't strictly speaking not talking. Like that is
right.
not the end of keeping silence, you know? It's supposed to be to cultivate that meditation. And so like, I don't know. It just kind of opened up that experience where I all of a sudden I was like in a different mindset because I had run into this issue 20 seconds into keeping silence. It was hilarious. So it was so funny. Oh, so funny.
So good.
And then the Trudeau one was the Easter Vigil was great. Yeah. You know, it was great. Again, we went with my brother-in-law and Renee, and he got to experience the Trudeau one for the first time, and yeah, it was just special because like that's the mass of masses, you know.
Yeah.
And so like hilariously, we all got the candles, and Renee's decided to burn at a 500% rate. And so like 10 seconds into the vigil, she's holding a stump of a candle.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was so funny. But just to like, I don't know, have it like, because one of the purposes of the vigil is that it goes through salvation history, like basically, you know, beginning to end. And so him getting to experience that, and we had some extended family members with us too, and then we actually went again on in the morning because we wanted to bring Michael to Mass.
Nice.
So we went in the morning as well. But yeah, it was just a special. I think one of the reasons it was so special was because it was so special for him.
Yeah.
You know that he said this is the best Easter I've ever had.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, I can't, you know.
So
I'm so grateful for that, you know.
What was it like for you going, essentially going twice for Easter, knowing that you didn't have to go, right? Because I find, as the celebrant, there are two very, very distinct celebrations. I love celebrating the vigil, but I also love celebrating on Easter Sunday. Whereas I don't have quite the same feeling on Christmas, for like Christmas Eve versus Christmas Day.
Right.
The Easter Vigil, I think it's because the vigil is so distinct and so different. And I've usually got at least a baptism or a confirmation or several, you know, thrown in there. So it's a different experience because you're welcoming people into the church. There's there's a level of commitment. The people who come to the Easter Vigil, they've committed.
You don't. This is not a thing. You don't accidentally go to the vigil.
Exactly. I just wandered in. And if somebody does accidentally wander in and they decide to stick it out, they're always glad they did it. And you never see them miss the vigil ever again. They come back every year after that. Once you've seen it, like you can't unsee it. You can't not go. Yeah. The Easter vigil becomes your goal.
You can't unsee it.
It's true. Like it's like, I got to be there. I got to see this.
I know. I know.
And then I think on Easter Sunday, it's distinct. There's just something different happening. There's a way that that Easter Sunday unfolds that's really wonderful. This year with Easter being so early, it was like, There's a great joy sometimes on Easter Sunday because God's providence, I'm telling you, somehow on Easter Sunday, it's like the first really nice, sunny, warm day of the year. You could kind of lead up to it and it's not that great, but all of a sudden Easter Sunday is just nice and like just a beautiful day. This year, not so much. I mean, it was a nice day. It wasn't like raining and miserable or anything, but it wasn't that warm and there was some wind and stuff. I was like, all right. I was so grateful this year at the Easter Vigil that the wind was not crazy.
Right, because of the giant bonfire.
Exactly. When you've got a big fire going, having wind blowing like crazy really just puts a it puts a damper on the whole celebration.
You
know, it's really nice when you can have some decent stuff. So I got to tell you a story about my Easter fire last year. I do the kosher salt with the rubbing alcohol because it's the easiest way to make sure that you have a fire. Like when you need to guarantee there will be fire, you just go with the basics. And if you use wood or try to burn other stuff, sometimes you get a heavy smoke. And if there's any wind, that heavy smoke is blowing all over your vestments and all into the faces of the people who are about to come into the church. So they're crying before they've even gone into the church. And they're not crying because of emotion or because of God's grace. They're crying because they just got acrid smoke blown in their face. So it's not as pleasant, you know. But last year at the vigil, we lit the fire, but I realized that we lit the fire before everybody had exited the church to like join us around the fire. And I went, oh no. And I don't know what was happening. It was like they were taking their sweet time getting out of the church. Well, it's rubbing alcohol. And so I'm blessing the fire and I'm about to start preparing the candle. And I realize this thing isn't going to keep going. So I reach down, I've got the rest of the rubbing alcohol, the rest of the bottle. And I'm like, stand back, guys. And I like put my altar servers back two steps and I just threw all the rest of the rubbing alcohol onto the fire and like tossed the bottle to the side. Like, big, big poof. Like, that might not have been the safest move and investments and everything, right, right, you know, but right. It was worth it.
You know, when
I'm telling you, we get to play with fire. It's the greatest thing in the world.
When I served Mass with you in high school, we never got to play with fire.
No,
you know,
that's so true. That's that true.
You know, the heck, man.
Well, I mean, in my defense, a school Mass is a little bit different. You got to carry candles,
yeah,
right?
Fine.
You got to carry candles.
I got to carry candles. Yeah.
And I mean, can you imagine incensing the gym at Trinity? Like, just trying to, it just wouldn't have had the same effect. And I think
it would have smelled a lot better.
That's true. But I think we also would have set off a fire alarm and the sprinklers would have gone off and everything.
Probably.
That would have, I mean, I would have been a legend in that case.
You already are a legend in that school.
Yeah. Trinity Catholic class of what were we, 2014, 2013?
I was 20. Me?
Yeah.
I was 2014.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so
obviously me. No, maybe I was 2015.
To the Trinity.
I graduated college in 2019.
You would mean, I think your class is 2014 because
I'm 2014. Anyway,
whatever.
So, my experience of the vigil to the morning Mass.
Oh yeah, that's what we were talking about, right? Sorry.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing this back. Appreciate you.
Well, yeah, no problem. You only asked me questions. That's fine.
it's my question to you that I took over and answered instead.
Yeah, that's all right. It was, I think, you know, I haven't, the vigil is that thing you commit to that I had made the decision when Renee got confirmed 2 years ago that we would go to the vigil every year from then on, you know? So I kind of never planned on going to an Easter Sunday morning Mass ever again. So, you know, to go, I was like, man, I just wish I could bring Michael. And then it was very clear as soon as we got to the vigil that I made the right decision in leaving Michael home. And so going to the morning Mass, maybe this, you should, so correct me, okay? Because I know it's wrong. I know it's wrong, but correct me. It's almost like it felt weak, you know? Like, I was like, oh, man, I'm going to the one-hour one instead of the four-hour one. Come on, man. Pull yourself together, you know? But the thing is, I recognize that's flawed. And I say it really, so I'm opening the door for you to tease me.
Well, I mean,
you know?
You're right. You're right that it's flawed.
Yeah.
No, it's not, I don't think it's weak, right?
No, I know.
But
I know.
There is something like, again, once you've gone to an Easter vigil, like we did ours actually in 2.5 hours. I was really proud. Like, and it at no time did we rush. At no time was this like we're skipping stuff. We did all 7 of the Old Testament readings before we got to the Romans and then the Gospel. Like, so we did all the stuff. We sang the Psalms. Like we did all the things that you're supposed to do, and still did it in 2.5 hours. I went, okay, you know what? That's long for us. I have cousins who are Greek Orthodox, and like their regular Sunday is 2.5 hours.
Right, sure.
That's a normal Sunday. I can only imagine what Easter has to be like for them.
Interrupt,
please.
What do you think about that? I mean, there is a piece of me that wishes every Sunday had as much flair. I think that's one of the reasons people love the TLM, because it's got like.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's got more aesthetic. And I'm not saying that's the only reason, obviously, right?
So here,
but I think that's appealing to people.
It's funny. I had a conversation with my cousin's priest years and years ago, man. And he told me that when he gets ready for the Divine Liturgy, so he's Greek Orthodox, he said, you know, I have to remember certain things. I said, like, what do you mean you have to remember? He goes, well, He's a married priest. He said, I take my wedding ring off because when I'm celebrating the Divine Liturgy, I'm not there as a husband or as a father. I'm there as Christ's priest. And my purpose is to be interceding for the whole people, not just for my family, my wife. So I take my ring off.
Right.
And he said, I actually have a little spot that I place it like back behind the iconostasis. And he goes, so My marriage is with me. It's there.
Right.
It's sacred to me. But I'm not wearing it as I do this. Oh, okay. And they say, my watch comes off because my time doesn't matter. The liturgy is bringing us into what's eternal. And I was like, that's it. And I've never worn a watch, or I try never to wear a watch when I celebrate Mass.
Yeah.
Everyone smiles. Like, I've looked and I've seen pictures of me saying Mass. I'm like, why do I have a watch on? I realized I just forgot that day to take it off. Cause you get so used to having a watch on. You kind of forget.
Yeah. But, well, that is a good enough for nobody should wear a watch when they go to Mass.
There's something to the idea of like, give yourself that time to step outside of time. Right. And if we also understand what the liturgy is meant to do, and this is where Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, the Easter Vigil, these are such helpful things because mystically they're meant to bring us outside of our time and space and to be face to face with the realities being celebrated. So like we are at the foot of the cross, we are at the empty tomb, like we're supposed to feel like we're really there. So stepping outside of time can be good. If Mass goes long,
and to an extent, it would be wrong for us to stand at the foot of the cross every Sunday, or stand outside the empty tomb every Friday. Yeah. Although I don't know, well, I mean, maybe I'm wrong there because every Friday is a smaller Good Friday, right?
I think if we understood what the liturgy is supposed to be, and this is a thing that the Greek Orthodox, as I understand it, and I might not have the right read on the Greeks here. But my understanding is that what takes so long is not, it's not like it was a long homily. So if we think about like, where would we expect to see a really long service or something like that? A lot of like the Baptists, right? Their sermon is 45 minutes or an hour. And that's nothing unusual that they preach for a really long time. In the Catholic Church, we don't preach that long. Our habit is not a long homily, and if somebody goes up to 15 minutes, they're criticized for being too long, right? So
I actually love a long homily. I'm just throwing that out.
If it's good, I don't mind if it's long.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I am presupposing that it's a good homily. That's for sure.
Because I've heard long homilies that are bad.
Right.
Like just bad.
Brutal.
Look, if I know when I don't have it, man. I'm going to say this, like, I'm not patting myself on the back of me, maybe a little bit, but like when I don't have it, I know, just shut up, sit down, be done. Don't drag this out. And cause I've made the mistake of trying to like get back on track.
Right.
Doesn't work, man. I'm telling you, if you don't have it, just sit down, be done.
Right. Right.
So I think we tend to think that why is Mass long? Well, Mass is going to be long because the homily was long. It doesn't have to be. The liturgy itself, the prayer of the liturgy could go longer. But if you look at the Roman Rite, the way the Roman Rite has always been, there's a certain like simplicity and sobriety and directness to the Roman Rite. So the way that the Roman Rite, even in the traditional form, runs, it's not meant to run incredibly, incredibly long. In fact, even if like a traditional Mass goes really long, like well past an hour mark or into like 2 hours, usually if it's going really long, it's because there's been something extra with the choir. There's been some kind of additional singing. So like the musical piece has gone on longer. But the way that the Mass is written, if we're just saying what the Mass gives us, you should be able to finish in about an hour.
Right.
It's not really meant to go that much longer. So there's something to like the intention. It's not meant to be drawn out too long,
essentially, I mean, maybe you're not saying this, but what I'm hearing, so you know, that's what matters. No, I'm kidding.
Is how that you it would interpret be, my words is the only thing that we
exactly
care about. Yeah, yeah,
exactly, exactly. Is it might even be a little phony to drag it on?
Yeah, exactly. Because then what that means is that actually you're adding something where it doesn't belong.
Right. And that's definitely no good.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Or it means that you've preached too long. And look.
And nobody wants that.
Exactly. It's just not needed. By the way, you graduated high school in 2015. And I know that because your senior year was also my first year here at the parish. I was both at the parish and at the high school for a little while. And so it was the tail end of your senior year. And that's how, so it was 2015 because I didn't come here until January.
You know, it's funny because I remember high school via which years the Rangers went how far in the playoffs. And I thought the Rangers got all the way to the Stanley Cup final in my senior year, but I think it was my junior year because it was 2014.
But who did they lose to? That's what I've been telling. Question.
They lost to the Kings.
Yeah, okay.
So it was a New York, Los Angeles, not Los Angeles. That's not a right word.
there's no T in
also
there.
Also saying
never has been.
Also saying right word. That's not the correct phrase. So the theme of this of today's episode is Matt is wrong a lot.
Oh my goodness. Well, all right. Here's I actually had a liturgical thought for this episode today before we got on this entire subject. And that is that as we are recording on what is celebrated liturgically as the Feast of the Annunciation.
Right.
The Annunciation is normally March 25th. This year, March 25th fell within Holy Week. And so Holy Week is so particular that nothing else is celebrated during Holy Week. Everything that could fall during Holy Week either is simply not observed that year or is transferred. Now, ordinarily, I am I'm a little torn when it comes to the idea of transferring a feast. I don't know if we've talked about it. I'm sure we've talked. I've talked about it so many times, and like people are sick of me doing this thing. But like, all right, here in the Diocese of Bridgeport, we celebrate the solemnity of the Ascension of the Lord on its proper day, which is a Thursday. The Ascension happened on a Thursday because that's how we get from Ascension Thursday to Pentecost and the novena of Pentecost, the 9 days like waiting. And that's what scripture tells us happened, that it was nine days later that they were in the upper room and the Holy Spirit fell upon them. So if we if we count logically from Pentecost backwards, 9 days is, it's a Thursday. So Jesus ascended on a Thursday. So the Ascension has always been celebrated.
And if the liturgy is
going to
be catechetical.
Yeah, exactly. And so, In all of New England, New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Nebraska, the Ascension is celebrated on Thursday.
Field.
Yeah, in the rest of the country, it's celebrated. It's transferred to Sunday, which is dumb. It's just bad. It's just dumb. The Ascension is meant to be connected to Pentecost, so we don't.
It's a holy day of obligation, right?
Yeah. As far as I know.
Right. And so do you think that's why it's been transferred?
I think the thinking is like, let's acknowledge that this is important. So we're going to put it on Sunday so that people can celebrate it. But it's bad reasoning. It's just bad reasoning. It hasn't done anything.
You can celebrate on a Thursday.
Exactly. And it ought to be. I feel the same way about the Epiphany, that we universally celebrate the Epiphany on Sunday instead of on January 6th is mind-boggling to me. Like the Epiphany is January 6th. That's just the day that it's supposed to be. And it's silly for us to make that transfer. However, there are certain things that if they fall on a Sunday, get transferred so that they can still be observed. Because normally Sunday takes precedence over everything else. So if the Solemnity of St. Joseph, if March 19th is a Sunday, we celebrate St. Joseph on March 20th. Which makes sense to me. Like we still say he's important
enough because it's liturgically sound.
Exactly. So I don't mind that kind of a transference. So that's how I feel about the Annunciation. If it falls during Holy Week, and March 25th can fall during Holy Week, then we move it to the Monday after the second Sunday of Easter, so that we get the integrity of Holy Week, the integrity of the octave of Easter, and then we celebrate this extremely important mystery of the Annunciation, that the angel Gabriel comes to Mary and makes this great announcement. So I like that we transfer Annunciation in this context.
Right.
I would not like transferring the Annunciation to another day or something else for no other reason. And I'm pretty sure I should have done my homework about this before I say anything, but I'm going to go ahead and just record myself saying something that potentially is wrong. It's okay. I feel like you're
on
my side.
That's the theme of the episode.
Yes. Thank you, Matthew. I'm not sure, but I think that if the Annunciation were to fall on a Sunday that wasn't Palm Sunday, we would still celebrate the Annunciation even on Sunday. I don't think I don't think Annunciation would then get transferred. I think that Annunciation would actually take the place of Sunday. I'm not sure though, because like I know we do that with Immaculate Conception. I think Immaculate Conception is celebrated no matter what day of the week it falls on. December 8th, I think, is always celebrated as the Immaculate Conception. I'm not sure. Anyway, these are like the fun, silly things about like calendars and stuff that I really like to get into because. All right, at the end of the day, I think that I have a very logical position on the whole calendar thing, but I'm also quite certain that I have some inconsistencies in my own argumentation about the calendar. And so there's probably a way in which some of my argument is just based on personal preference and not based on logic. And then there's a way in which my argument is soundly rooted in what is logical and true and decent and good. So I'm just trying to stay on the side of truth, justice, and the American way, like Superman.
The American way, baby. That is the theme of the episode.
The American way.
The American way.
Yeah, if there's anything that we've clearly done, it's America here.
Do you know that I name every episode with three things?
Oh,
right, so it'll be like X, Y, Z, and other tangents.
Yeah, okay.
This one's probably going to be...
Truth, justice, and the American way.
Truth, justice, and the American way.
Even though...
And other tangents.
That's all of a minute and a half of our entire content today. Everything else we talked about. So much more important.
That's so funny.
Oh, man.
So funny.
All right. Hey, man.
Yeah.
It's great to talk to you.
You too.
Well,
I'm glad you had a blessed true one.
Likewise. Yeah. I'm glad you had a good one.
It was great.
So much grace. And praying for your brother-in-law too.
Yeah, thank you.
So beautiful.
Thank you. I've only not mentioned his name because I figured privacy is something that should be respected.
He probably appreciates that.
Yeah. But eventually it'll be public information. Yeah.
Hey, are you going to put the link in the show notes to how folks can join us for the gala with Cardinal Dolan and our live audience recording of our interview?
Yes. The answer is yes.
I'm so excited that we're going to get to do that. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be great. Yeah. It's going to be great. All right.
Cool, man.
See you next time, Father.